Hello there, and thanks for joining me on the podcast today. Socialism, communism, the political scene today. I've been doing a series, and we've now done 8 sequences or episodes of this series of the psychology of politics. So we come to number 9 now, the psychology of politics. And first of all, I'd like to focus on that issue of socialism and communism. We hear so much about it with the candidates that are now running. Many of them are very much advocate of socialism. Others are moderately so. Others are very much against the socialistic way of government and way of life and way of living. And we have the entire political spectrum, from the Democrat to the Republican to the Independent, and all the steps in between. So a lot of people really don't understand what this is all about. And I didn't understand either, and probably still have much to learn regarding these particular issues. But as a psychologist, I was trained in social psychology. I was trained in sociology, and I was trained in anthropology. 3 areas that have to do with social living, social justice, social relationships. And when we deal with the political scene and we're talking about socialism, that's what we're talking about, is a way of life. We're talking about a way of living. We're talking about a style of life. It's not just economy. It's not just the political system. It comes right down to every home. It comes right down to every family. It comes down to every person. How then shall you live? Well, first of all, let's just take one step. Communism, socialism, same thing, except for one fact. In communism, there is the absence of religion. In fact, there is disdain for religion. There's no recognition of God. There's no recognition of a righteous moral system according to any biblical standards or religious traditions or patterns of life. Communism is socialism with the absence of a God, the absence of religion. So we probably don't have that. Now, there are communists within America, that's to be sure. And there are probably some in government, to be sure. But the advocates today that are before us in the election cycle are not communists. I haven't seen any communism part of their thinking. But they are socialistic. Socialism does prevail, and socialism is promoted and advocated by many of the candidates that are now running for office. Some moderately so, and some very, very evidently so, and strongly so. So what are we talking about when we talk about socialism? Well, it's a very complex topic, and there's a huge amount of information that one needs to be aware of and can consider. And the only thing we can say is start reading. Start reading articles, start reading books, start reading pamphlets, whatever you can find. Go on the internet and look at communism and look at socialism and learn about the tenets, the practices of socialism, and how one would live under such a regiment and scheme. Here are just 5 tick points that I would like to bring to your attention. In socialism and in communism, it's state ownership. Property, factories, businesses are owned by the state. It's state ownership. The television systems and television networks are under the state control, under state ownership. Insurance, under the state ownership. The communication systems, internet, would be under the state system. Healthcare, under the state system. In other words, just like the post office, it'd be under the state system. In other words, the state would own, with the state would operate, the functions of a society. That's number one. Number 2 is there is distribution. In other words, there are 2 styles of distribution. A first pile of money that goes to those in government, goes to the government and to those in government, and those that are responsible for the government. That's where a pile of money goes. The remaining money is distributed among the people of the country. Theoretically, it's there to be equal. One is not to have an advantage over another. One is not to be richer than another. The example given is when a student gets an A grade, the student is supposed to go to the teacher and say, "Give me a C and distribute my points to the rest of the class so that we all get an A, or we all get a C, so that everybody is the same." So that's distribution. That's number 2. Number 3 is this: decision making. It's in the hands of a few. It's not in the hands of the many. It's not in the hands of the people. It's in the hands of the few people in government. That's where decisions are made. It's within the government for the people, not in the government by the people, but it's for the people. That's decision making. Here's number 4, civil servants. Workers are civil servants. Workers work for the state. Workers work for the betterment of the state. The money that is made by a company goes to the state. In other words, there's a civil servant attitude and mentality and distribution of responsibilities and power and influence and income. And then number five is the churches are under the state control, under state rule, under state control, under state management, under state policies. In other words, a church isn't free to just preach or teach what they wish. It's what the government will allow them to teach and preach. We see this very clearly in China, where you have the state church, and then you have the underground church. It's the underground church that is the freedom to teach and to preach if they don't get caught. But the state church is what prevails, and it's the leader of that particular community or that particular region that decides how much a church can teach and how much they can meet and where they meet and how open they can be, etc. So the church is under the influence of the state. Now, there's a lot of other points having to do with communism and having to do with socialism. But that's a bite of it. That's kind of like a bite of the apple. And one has to consider these kind of issues and other issues if you advocate socialism. So if you are on the cusp of thinking that maybe socialism is an option because Bernie Sanders is powerful and he presents well and he's persuasive, or that Elizabeth Warren is persuasive and presents well and looks nice and all that, if you're persuaded by that, dig a little deeper and go into the issue of communism. Go into the issue of socialism and see if that's what you really believe and you really think is right for our country. Now, you have to understand this, that America has never been socialistic. We don't have a socialism form of government. So in all practical purposes, it won't work. We are so entrenched and so ingrained in free enterprise, in our constitution, in our structures of our country, are so structured around free enterprise that socialism cannot prevail here. But there are people who think it could. There are people who would want to make it that way, who would like to force that upon us. So the only thing I can say is start reading, start studying, start talking, start listening, start interacting with other people to get this idea of socialism, okay? Now, I have a second point under this psychology of politics, and that has to do with our young man that's running for president, and that is Mr. Buttigieg. Now, he is from South Bend, Indiana, was the mayor. And if you read what's happened to South Bend, Indiana during his mayorship, one would not be particularly impressed. But that's not my point. My point is this. Mr. Buttigieg is in a claim that he's publicly announced that he's a homosexual and he's married. Now, that raises some real issues. Now, one may agree or not agree with that particular way of life. That's not my point. Here's my point. A homosexual president, consider this. 54 countries of the world are Muslim. 54 countries of the world, a homosexual is illegal and can be arrested and can be put to death, and in some countries thrown off the roof of a building. You see, homosexuality is not acceptable in the Muslim world. 54 countries, and there are other countries that are largely Muslim, but they're not Muslim countries. How can then a homosexual president visit any of these Muslim countries? How can a homosexual president negotiate terms and treaties with such countries? How can a president invite the leadership of such countries to America for a state dinner or for discussion when there is a disdain and there is a rejection and an illegality of homosexuality? That's my question. How can a homosexual president run a country and interact with a world government that is opposed to homosexuality? Now, there's a lot of other countries where homosexuality is not illegal, but it's not acceptable. You take your whole Muslim, the Buddhist world, if you will, the Sikh world of India and Pakistan. You take many of these countries that would walk away from anybody that is homosexual and not have dealings with them because of the disdain for that way of life. So Mr. Buttigieg has something to deal with. You as a voter have something to deal with. Our country has something to deal with. How can a homosexual president prevail as president and have influence in the world? I don't think it can be done. I think it would be an issue that would be rejected by other countries, a person that would be rejected by other countries, terms that would be rejected by other countries. Negotiating power would be weak and minimal. So I think Mr. Buttigieg has a considerable amount of thinking to do in that area of his own homosexuality. And if he were president, how would he function? How would he prevail? How would he negotiate? How would he deal with? How would he interact with? How would he negotiate with countries of the world where homosexuality is illegal and unwanted and unappreciated. Well, there we are, the psychology of politics. I have some other issues, and we'll deal with that at another time, but I think that's a bite that we need to really consider as a country as we come to the point of view of voting. So give that some thought. So anyway, thanks for joining me today, and I want to, again, remind you that if you have a lock and safe problem, go to Lehman, L-E-H-M-A-N, apostrophe, Lehman's Lock and Safe in Fresno, California. If you have a problem with a lock, problem with a key, you want a safe, contact him. He'd be very willing to help you. Here's his number, 559-228-1805. So I recommend him to you if you have a lock problem of some kind. He's the man to go to. He's the go-to man. Okay, bye for now.